听力课堂，听 class.com。
Unit 4, A.
Part 1. A. How to cough is not what you typically learn in school, but the nurse at tiny Upton Elementary Middle School in Northeast Wyoming stepped up to the public address microphone just before Christmas break and taught the student body, all 156 of them. You cough into the crook of your arm, of course.It was this advice, along with a vigorous regimen of hand washing, desk scrubbing, and doorknob disinfecting, that helped the school avoid an epidemic of influenza. As in Upton, educators across the nation are combating an unusually tenacious cold and flu season by stressing often neglected basics of personal hygiene. They're being aided by a new government campaign that encourages hand washing and, yes,proper coughing techniques. Upton's principal, Peterson, says her janitorial staff took extra care scouring the school over winter break. Custodians now wipe down desks and doorknobs every day. When students returned to school in January after winter break, they found a new contraption hanging on the cafeteria wall, a dispenser of hand sanitizing lotion.Now everyone takes a dollop and disinfects his or her hands before lunch. But even extra precautions weren't enough to stop a mild mid-December flu epidemic, in which 22% of the students were out sick. Many other schools, especially in hard-hit areas, had higher absentee rates in December. During the biggest outbreak, we just called parents and sent kids home, Peterson says.Though no reliable figures exist on how many children are going home sick this winter, government figures show that 22 million school days are lost each year to the common cold alone. Since autumn, an alarming number of children have died from flu-related illness.
B. 1. He died of a heart attack brought on by intoxication. 2.Because of the seriousness of the flu epidemic and the number of deaths, they've taken much more initiative than in the past to alert school nurses and teachers. 3. If we relent in our efforts to fight this pandemic, our nation and the world at large are threatened with extinction. 4. Despite the harsh economic conditions,There was a need for greater commitment to confront the HIV/AIDS pandemic. 5. The task of making Zambia a healthy nation was not the responsibility of the government alone. 6. Each individual was uniquely resourceful in the fight against the pandemic through various initiatives. 7.AIDS does not choose between religion, ethnic grouping, nationality, or status, but affects each and every individual in the society. 8. There was a need not only for information, but also for a value-based approach in the fight against the disease. 9. One of the most difficult problems is to find out how genes contribute to diseases.That have a complex pattern of inheritance, such as in the cases of diabetes, asthma, cancer, and mental illness. 10. Genes may affect how a person reacts to environment factors.
Part 2. Alec was born with Bilaria tresia, which was diagnosed when he was 7 weeks old.Bilaria tresia is a rare, serious liver disease of the young infant whose cause is unknown. It results in inflammation and obstruction of the ducts, which carry bile from the liver into the intestine. Since bile cannot flow normally, it backs up in the liver. Alex suffered from jaundice, pale stools, dark urine, and a swollen abdomen. After running many tests, including a liver biopsy, His doctors performed an operation called the Kasai procedure. The Japanese surgeon who developed it, the procedure involves removing the damaged ducts outside of the liver and replacing them with the length of the baby's own intestine, which acts as a new duct. The aim of the Kasai procedure is to allow excretion of bile from the liver into the intestine via the new duct. Alex's doctors have taken him off vitamin supplements A, D, E, and K, and the antibacterial medication. He is still taking ursodeoxycholic acid, a medication that is commonly used to treat itching. Although he no longer suffers from jaundice, his liver enzymes are still slightly elevated. He has not yet had a liver transplant. Alex sees his GI doctor every 4 months and is doing very well. He is our miracle baby, and we wouldn't elevate him for the world.
Part 3, Passage 1. The question of where the SARS virus came from is not just a matter of curiosity. While it doesn't directly affect efforts to stop the current outbreak, which is spreading from person to person, scientists say finding the ultimate source of the virus could help them prevent future outbreaks. If an animal source can be identified, potentially dangerous populations might be vaccinated or even slaughtered. A 1997 outbreak of the flu in Hong Kong that killed 6 people was spread by poultry. Hong Kong slaughtered 1.4 million chickens in response. Identifying an animal source could also help scientists find drugs to treat SARS. For one thing, that animal or its tissue might be used in experiments to test medicines. For another, if the ancestor of the SARS virus can be isolated, scientists can look for the crucial genetic changes that made the SARS virus so frightening. That could indicate targets for drugs and vaccines. Scientists had hoped to get clues into the origin of SARS recently when they announced they determined the genetic makeup of the SARS virus. The idea was that by looking for similarities between the SARS virus and other coronaviruses, they might be able to figure out the new germ's ancestry. But the SARS virus turned out to be far different from previously known coronaviruses. Wherever it came from, it's been evolving on its own for quite a while, not mixing genes with known coronavirus cousins. It could be an animal virus that had jumped to humans by chance contact, or by a process of change that allowed it to infect human tissues. Experts say the most likely way of getting infected from animals is by living in close contact with infected creatures, or slaughtering or butchering them, rather than eating them.
Passage 2. Mad cow disease, the brain infection that kills cows and some people who eat them, was first identified in Britain in 1985. Years after it was supposedly conquered, it is now on a comeback. The disease has spread widely in Europe, and there are danger signs in the United States, where it's never appeared. More than 80 Britons are already dead from eating mad cow meat. Most probably got infected while their government was assuring the nation that the fearsome cow disease could not infect people. 3 people in France have died of the disease, also presumably contracted from eating meat from diseased animals. On January 31, 2003, after the detection of 25 mad cows, Germany announced plans to slaughter and destroy 400,000 elderly cows, which, due to the long incubation period, are most prone to the disease. Beef consumption in Germany has dropped by 50% since November 2002, and 34 countries have banned German beef imports. Italian farmers have protested in Rome, demanding government compensation for losses caused by Italian mad cow scare. Beef sales have dropped in Spain, where 12 cows showed characteristic holes in their brains. Mad cow has also appeared in other European countries like Portugal, Switzerland, and the Netherlands. Although no mad cow has been seen in the United States, vigilance and concern are both on the increase. Drugs and vaccines have been made with products that could carry mad cow disease. In January 2003, the government began to ban beef imports from Brazil, which had received cattle from Britain in the 1980s. The action followed the previous December ban on all animal protein imports from Europe and represented a further tightening of restrictions to prevent infections in the United States.
Passage 3. Breast cancer is an uncontrolled, potentially deadly division of cells in the breast. In the United States, breast cancer is the most common women's cancer. According to the American Cancer Society and the National Cancer Institute, an average of one American woman in eight will develop breast cancer sometime during their life. Women in Africa and Asia have a lower risk of breast cancer than do women in North America and Europe. A small number of men also develop breast cancer. The risk of breast cancer increases for all women as they grow older. A woman's risk also increases if a relative, especially her mother or a sister, has also had the disease. Scientists have found two rare abnormal genes that greatly increase risk. Tests to detect these genes are available, but doctors disagree about when such tests should be used. Most women with one or two relatives who have had breast cancer do not have inherited genetic abnormalities. A painless lump is the most common symptom of breast cancer. Doctors advise women to examine their own breasts for lumps every month. A breast X-ray called a mammogram can detect many cancers before they can be felt. Most doctors recommend an annual mammogram for women over 50 years old. Doctors usually begin treatment of breast cancer by surgically removing the tumor. When the cancer is small, a lumpectomy can preserve the breast. In this operation, a surgeon removes the cancerous lump and a margin of the normal tissue surrounding it. The breast is then treated with radiation to kill stray cancer cells. If the cancer is large, the entire breast must often be removed.
Part 4. Prevention programs targeted at middle-aged men have succeeded in cutting the number of heart attacks among men. However, such programs are now needed for women and the elderly, who are suffering increased rates of heart attacks, a new Mayo Clinic study says. The study looked at people in Olmsted County, Minnesota, who'd been hospitalized for 1,820 heart attacks between 1979 and 1994. It found that heart attack rates for men in the county dropped by 8% during that time, but heart attacks for women increased by 36%. Further underscoring the gender-age divide, heart attacks among 40-year-old men declined 31%, but were up 49% among 80-year-old women. The study also found that while younger patients, both male and female, had an improved heart attack survival rate over those 15 years, the survival rate remained relatively unchanged for people over age 75. The American Heart Association reports that 529,659 Americans died in 1999 of coronary heart disease, which causes heart attacks and angina. Women accounted for 262,391, or 49.5% of those deaths. Study author Dr. Veronique Roger, a cardiologist, says that 25 years ago, heart disease was primarily viewed as a male disease. However, the trends identified in this study show that's clearly not true now. There's sort of a good news, bad news aspect to this study, Roger says. One is that, in fact, heart disease rates declined among middle-aged men, which is a good thing. So, whatever prevention methods to reduce the risk of heart attacks among this age group have been effective, we need to continue them, she says. The other side of the story, however, is that heart attacks are increasing in groups in which we wouldn't have necessarily thought that they would increase, Roger adds. So, the implications from a prevention standpoint are quite clear. We need to target primary prevention methods toward women and the elderly. That means programs designed specifically for women and the elderly to encourage and help them quit smoking, improve their diets, and get more exercise, she says. It's common sense that perhaps the approaches that are used for middle-aged men would not necessarily work for elderly individuals or for women, Roger says. The report didn't offer any suggested prevention programs for women or the elderly. Roger suggests that different factors may be contributing to the higher rate of heart attacks among women and older people. One is the increase in the number of women who smoke cigarettes. An estimated 22% of U.S. women are smokers, according to the American Lung Association. Also, as more women enter the workforce, they have less time to devote to exercise and other healthy lifestyle choices. Roger is now studying data from the years after 1994 to determine if women and the elderly continue to have increased heart attack rates compared to middle-aged men. A doctor with the American Public Health Association, APHA, suspects the trend will be much the same as it was between 1979 and 1994. I don't think a lot has changed in the ensuing 7 years, says Dr. Richard Levinson, APHA Associate Executive Director. There's been a lot of discussion in the medical community about the value of heart attack prevention efforts for women and elderly people, but not much action, he says. It's a very interesting study. It points out the fact that women and the elderly have received less primary prevention, and that if primary prevention works, as it seems to in younger males, then women and the elderly should be targets, Levinson says. The challenge is to counter previous beliefs that women were naturally protected from heart disease by female sex hormones like estrogen, and that there wasn't much point in bothering with heart attack prevention for elderly people, he adds.
Unit 4. B.
Part 1. A. 200 years ago, the U.S. Public Health Service, of which the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, is an essential part, began as a humble maritime hospital in New York City. Its mission was simply to stop infectious disease from coming in on ships and spreading across the country. Today, as we celebrate the anniversary of the Public Health Service, another historic event has occurred. Scientists at the U.S. Department of Defense confirmed that tissue from a woman's body buried near the Bering Strait contains genetic material from the 1918 Spanish flu virus, the virus that caused the worst pandemic the world has ever known. This discovery will help us map the genetic structure of the microbe that sent a wave of death crashing around the globe 80 years ago. The time has come for mankind to launch a renewed, unified, global effort against infectious disease. Nature may have the power to create a pandemic, but together we have the power to prevent it, to stop it, to overcome it, to cure it. And there is no time like the millennium. For today, history and human progress have created an ironic contradiction in the fight against infectious disease. Some of the same forces that invite pandemics can also be harnessed to fight pandemics. With the globalization of travel and trade, immigration, communication, and industrialization, we have a smaller world with porous borders. So the bad news is that we have fewer barriers against the spread of infectious disease. Yet, the good news is that those fewer barriers mean new avenues to progress and the potential for sharing information and efforts to stop infectious disease.
B. 1. It is hard to believe today that flu could be so nearly apocalyptic. 2. In Philadelphia alone, 11,000 died of the flu in a single month. 3. In this hospital, there is a 2-year waiting list for all elective surgery. 4. As silently, as mysteriously, as quickly as it came, the pandemic terror began to fade away. 5. The great flu was soon pushed off the front pages and out of the public eye. 6. If you have trouble sleeping at night, you could try counting sheep. 7. It is easy to assume that modern medicine has defeated this enemy once and for all. 8. They reported a sudden outbreak of the disease in the south of the country. 9. In Britain, AIDS tests are performed on all people who offer to become blood donors. 10. The disease which once claimed millions of lives in the country has now been eradicated.
Part 2. The bird flu crisis is affecting the poultry trade across the region. Asian countries are taking steps to deal with their latest health crisis after 3 deaths in Vietnam were confirmed to be linked to bird flu. Various countries have announced bans on the import of live birds from affected areas. And South Korea has confirmed its first case of the virus in birds for a week. By far, the most serious outbreak has been in Vietnam, where experts from the World Health Organization have confirmed that the deaths of 2 children and an adult were caused by the H5N1 virus, which is the same as that found in the sick chicken. But at the moment, health officials are playing down fears of an epidemic of bird flu or avian flu among humans. The evidence to date is that there is no sign of human-to-human transmission. However, should this occur, we would have a serious situation. We are principally worried about the possibility that the avian virus could acquire full capability to transmit from one person to another. Vietnam confirmed it had an outbreak of the illness among chickens last week, and it is thought that around 1 million birds have died, with thousands of others being culled to try and prevent the spread of the disease.
Part 3, Passage 1. Civets are considered a delicious food in wild game restaurants in southern China. Now the Chinese government decides to slaughter 10,000 civet cats in wildlife markets, after tests suggest a link to a possible SARS case. The announcement came after researchers at Hong Kong University said they found similarities between a virus found in the cats and in a suspected SARS patient in the southern Chinese province of Guangdong. They suggested the virus may have come from civets and the sale of the animals should be banned. The suspected human case is a 32-year-old male from Guangdong who developed a fever and was hospitalized 4 days later with pneumonia. He remains isolated in hospital in Guangzhou, the capital of Guangdong. Laboratory tests on the patient by Chinese doctors have been inconclusive, and results from tests by the World Health Organization are expected soon. Unlike influenza, SARS has no known treatment and little is still known of its origins other than it sprang up in Guangdong province in November 2002. The SARS virus belongs to a virus which also causes the common cold in humans. SARS killed more than 900 people worldwide and sickened nearly 8,100 before dying out in June 2003. The flu-like illness claimed 349 lives on China's mainland, and more than 5,000 were stricken. There have been 2 other confirmed cases of SARS since the WHO declared the epidemic over in the summer of 2003. One was in Singapore and the other in Taiwan, both involving researchers working with the virus. Meanwhile, A Philippine woman has been isolated in a Manila hospital as a suspected SARS case. If her case shifts from a suspected SARS case to a probable case, the woman's contacts since late December 2003 will be traced and they will be isolated.
Passage 2. For various reasons, AIDS remains a disease that cannot yet be controlled using traditional technological methods. Vaccines are not yet available, treatments are limited, and a cure is still a vision for the future. The numbers present a formidable obstacle to the medical confidence in the effectiveness of prevention efforts. The first 100,000 AIDS cases in the U.S. were reported over a period of 8 years. The second 100,000 cases in a period of only 26 months. By 1996, more than 500,000 AIDS cases were reported, and more than 300,000 people had died. Although the number of cases reported each year are expected to level off in the U.S., the toll of 60,000 to 80,000 annual new cases and more than 50,000 deaths each year represent by far the highest number and rate of cases in any industrialized country. Because millions of additional adolescents and young adults become potentially at risk each year, the challenge of reducing the number of youths infected with HIV depends upon continued efforts to educate and provide skills and upon continued availability of resources for prevention. Despite some successes in our efforts to prevent HIV infection, there are still enormous obstacles to HIV prevention: denial, discrimination, and scarcity. HIV prevention efforts must be strong enough and remain visible enough to warn and protect current and future generations of young men and women. These efforts will be successful only if they are coupled with sustained, visible efforts to prevent discrimination against those who are infected and at risk. HIV prevention should be a continuous, multi-generational effort that extends well into the lifetimes of our children and their children. Thinking long-term and remaining committed are the key characteristics needed in both science and prevention in order to maximize the chances of conquering HIV.
Passage 3. There is clear evidence that SARS is spread by droplet contact. When someone with SARS coughs or sneezes, infected droplets are sprayed into the air. The virus can live on hands, tissues, and other surfaces for up to 6 hours in these droplets, and up to 3 hours after the droplets have dried, and reinfection is common. While hands and other objects the droplets have touched can spread SARS, airborne transmission is also a real possibility in some cases. Symptoms found in many patients include fever, chills and shaking, muscle aches, cough and headache. Less common symptoms include dizziness, productive cough, sore throat, runny nose, nausea and vomiting, and diarrhea. People with active symptoms of illness are clearly contagious, but it is not known how long contagiousness may begin before symptoms appear, or how long contagiousness might linger after the symptoms have disappeared. Minimizing contact with SARS patients minimizes the risk of the disease. This might include minimizing travel to locations where there is an uncontrolled outbreak. Where possible, direct contact with SARS patients should be avoided until 10 days after the fever and other symptoms are gone. People should be taught to cover the mouth and nose when sneezing or coughing, and not to share food, drink, or utensils. In some situations, masks and goggles may be useful for preventing airborne or droplet spread. Gloves might be used in handling potentially infectious secretions. Aiming to potentially contain the spread of a contagious disease, public health authorities rely on many strategies. Two of these strategies are isolation and quarantine. The two strategies differ in that isolation applies to people who are known to have an illness, and quarantine applies to those who have been exposed to an illness but who may or may not become infected.
Part 4. The next 2 to 8 weeks are critical for Mozambique's health and aid workers fighting the threat of potential cholera and malaria epidemics, said the World Health Organization, WHO, today. The threat of a malaria epidemic in the country is increasing and will be at its most dangerous in around 3 to 6 weeks' time as floodwaters gradually subside, the rains stop, and warm temperatures return ideal breeding conditions for mosquitoes. Suspected cholera cases are also on the rise, with 2 special treatment centers set up in Maputo City and a 3rd expected to open today, Friday, at Makava. The fact that so many people are currently displaced also increases the threat of disease. Acute diarrhea cases have increased significantly in Maputo City, and 14 out of 100 diarrhea patients were recently tested positive for cholera. 2 areas badly affected by flooding, Shai Shai and Chibuto districts, have already seen very clear increases in the number of malaria cases compared to last year. Many other parts of the country have not yet reported an increased number of malaria cases compared to the same period last year. The Mozambique Ministry of Health has prepared a 3-month malaria emergency control plan, supported by key UN health agencies including WHO and UNICEF. The plan includes strategies for early diagnosis and treatment for malaria, mosquito population control, protecting people against mosquito bites, mainly through the distribution of insecticide-treated bed nets. Areas at risk of serious malaria outbreaks continue to be sprayed with insecticides today in an effort to keep the local mosquito populations down. Spraying operations are underway in Shai Shai and Chibuto, and preparations are underway in the Chokwe district. In addition to the cholera treatment centers, a major health education program is underway to warn the population on how best to prevent the disease. This includes a door-to-door campaign and health activists working in the community. Water supplies are also being chlorinated as an extra precaution. The WHO representative for Mozambique, Dr. Carlos Tiny, said, "Cholera and malaria remain our biggest health threats. Health workers are also seeing more acute diarrhea cases every day. We are under a tremendous amount of pressure here to keep ahead of this problem. These diseases are preventable. We are doing all we can to slow the spread of disease, but there are areas where people still do not have access to clean water or shelter, and so they are obviously more at risk. The number of cholera cases is expected to increase. While the exact increase cannot be predicted, cholera and other diarrheal diseases will remain a concern as long as sanitation conditions and access to safe drinking water are inadequate in the affected provinces." WHO coordinates the Southern African Malaria Control Program. WHO and UNICEF are the main partners in the global Rollback Malaria, RBM, movement. RBM aims to see global malaria deaths halved by the year 2010. Other partner organizations include the World Bank, UNDP, national governments, and NGOs. African heads of state will be meeting next month to look at how best to accelerate the rolling back of malaria in the continent. The Nigerian government is hosting the summit meeting on rolling back malaria in Africa, in Abuja, Nigeria, on April 25th with WHO support. The summit is expected to draw on Mozambique's experiences of tackling malaria following a disaster.